Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I had a phone call into the operating room saying that United Healthcare wanted me to call them about one of the patients who was having surgery today, who was actually asleep having surgery, and, said I had to call right now. So I scrubbed out of my case, and I called United Healthcare, and the gentleman said he needed some information about her, wanted to know her diagnosis and whether her inpatient stay should be justified.
United Health's campaign to quiet critics. That's the headline of a New York Times expose of the largest health insurance company in the United States. We'll speak with journalist David Enrich. Then ICE raids terrorize immigrant communities.
I'm a single mother, and I have three children who depend on me. And it breaks my heart that every time I leave the house, they tell me, Mommy, be careful, because they can take you and send you to Mexico, and we're going to stay here without you.
We'll go to California to speak with Teresa Romero, the first immigrant Latina president of the United Farm Workers of America. And finally, 80 years ago today, the first nuclear bomb in the world was tested in the desert of New Mexico. Today, the Nobel Laureate Assembly for the Prevention of Nuclear War is gathering in Chicago. Nobel Prize-winning scientists, peace activists, and musicians. They'll release two new renditions of Nobel Laureate Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. That and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the Gaza Strip, at least 21 people were killed Wednesday morning at a food distribution site run by the militarized, shadowy, so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Survivors report guards fired tear gas at starving Palestinians lined up to receive aid parcels, triggering a panic that saw at least 15 people die as a result of the stampede. According to the United Nations, since May, at least 875 Palestinians have been killed, another 5,600 wounded by Israeli army and U.S. contractor gunfire while trying to gather food, most of them shot close to GHF sites. Meanwhile, Palestinian doctors report stocks of specialized formula for premature infants have run dry due to Israel's continuing blockade. Esra Abu Halib is the mother of a five-month-old struggling to survive at Nasser Hospital, where she says she's witnessed three other children die of malnutrition.
Once the milk carton is finished, you need the same type of milk that she took before. Where do we get it from? The crossings are closed. The whole world is closed in our faces. For how long must we remain like this? I mean, do we wait until the baby dies?
U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee has called on Israeli authorities to launch a probe into the killing of 20-year-old U.S. citizen Sefola Musalet, who was beaten to death Friday by Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank. In a statement, Ambassador Huckabee wrote, quote, "There must be accountability for this criminal and terrorist act," unquote. Huckabee, however, did not demand a U.S. investigation into Saif's murder, as his family is requesting. Meanwhile, Israeli settlers backed by Israeli soldiers are continuing to attack Palestinian communities. On Tuesday, dozens of Israeli settlers set fire to a vehicle yard in the village of Berka, east of Ramallah, destroying dozens of cars. Auto parts dealer Mohammed Asaliya says it was the sixth time he's been attacked by settlers.
شو بنخافش يعني هدول المستوطنين سوينا رعب انا.
Who said we're not afraid? The settlers scare us, not only in this town, in all villages, but specifically here. They come and burn cars, land, and they cut down olive trees. They burn. We do not have weapons to resist them. The army comes and they stand with the settlers. They don't come to protect us, but to stand with them. This happens over and over.
Israel's military says it's bombed the Syrian army headquarters in Damascus. Syrian media reported two civilians were injured in the attack, which came even as Israel separately stepped up attacks on the Druze-majority city of Suweida in southern Syria. Israel's attacks came as fighting resumed between Syrian government forces and Druze armed groups after a ceasefire agreement collapsed. Delegates from 30 countries gathered in Bogota, Colombia on Tuesday for an emergency conference on the situation in Gaza. The conference is led by South Africa and Colombia, two members of the Hague Group, a coalition of nations that pledged to cut military sales to Israel and to comply with an International Criminal Court arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. On Tuesday, Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory, told the conference all nations are obliged to take action against Israel's occupation and the slaughter of Palestinians.
Each state must immediately review and suspend all ties with the state of Israel. Military, strategic, political, diplomatic, economic relations, both imports and exports, and to make sure that their private sectors, insurers, banks, pension funds, universities, and other goods and service providers in the supply chain do the same.
To see our recent interview with Francesca Albanese, visit our website, democracynow.org. The U.S. Senate will take up President Trump's request to claw back more than $9 billion in congressionally approved spending after Vice President J.D. Vance broke a 50-50 tie Tuesday to open debate on a rescission bill. The legislation is aimed at codifying cuts made by the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, to foreign aid, including life-saving global health programs, emergency food and shelter assistance, peacekeeping and economic development. The bill would also eliminate all $1.1 billion allocated to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting for the next 2 years, zeroing out federal funding for PBS, NPR, and community TV and radio stations. PBS President Paula Kerger called the bill an existential threat for local stations. Democrats condemned the move as a power grab by President Trump. This is Michigan Democratic Senator Gary Peters.
Funding laws are still laws. And Congress passed these laws with bipartisan support to direct resources to these programs. No president gets unilateral say on how any law is implemented. And no president gets to overrule Congress's bipartisan laws.
The Pentagon said Tuesday half the 4,000 National Guard troops deployed to suppress protests in response to mass immigration raids in California will be removed from Los Angeles. This comes 6 weeks after the Trump administration deployed the California National Guard to Los Angeles, the first time in decades a president has deployed the National Guard without a governor's request. Some 700 active duty Marines will remain deployed in Los Angeles. We'll speak with the head of the United Farm Workers later in the broadcast. In Houston, Texas, a 22-year-old Palestinian man who was detained by federal agents without charge at the George Bush Intercontinental Airport for 9 days was released Monday following mounting pressure from advocates. Mohanned J.M. Alshrouf had obtained a U.S. visa before traveling to Texas from the occupied West Bank to reunite with his father, who's a U.S. citizen, and his siblings. Advocates said he'd completed a years-long immigration process and successfully passed rigorous background checks by both U.S. and Israeli authorities. Alshrouf was reportedly held in a waiting room, denied access to legal counsel, a change of clothes, proper food, or basic hygiene. Customs and Border Protection agents are typically prohibited from detaining people for longer than 72 hours. In Washington state, longtime immigrant farm worker and organizer Alfredo Lelo Juarez Zeferino has agreed to voluntarily leave the United States after being detained in an ICE jail for 4 months. A crowd of his supporters and family gathered outside Tacoma's Northwest ICE Processing Center Monday as 25-year-old Juarez appeared for an immigration hearing inside the jail. A judge has given him until August to return to his birth country of Mexico. For now, he's still detained. Juarez was taken by ICE agents in March after they stopped him on a rural road as he drove his girlfriend to her job on a tulip bulb farm. When he asked for a warrant, the agents reportedly broke his car window and handcuffed him. Supporters denounced his arrest as a kidnapping and said he was targeted over his labor activism. Juarez has lived in the United States for over a decade since he was a young child. To see our interview with Alfredo Lelo Juarez Zeferino when he was 16 years old and our coverage of his case, go to democracynow.org. In more news from Washington state, former Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert and at least eight others have been indicted on federal charges related to protests in June against Trump's immigration raids. Stuckert and over 30 others were arrested last month as a crowd gathered outside the Spokane ICE office to oppose the detention of a 21-year-old Venezuelan asylum seeker whom Stuckert was sponsoring. On Capitol Hill, President Trump's pick to serve as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations Tuesday applauded Republican efforts to defund the United Nations, saying he'd go even further if confirmed by the Senate. Mike Waltz testified that if confirmed, he would work to dismantle the U.N. agencies for Palestinian refugees. He also backed Republican efforts to cancel about $1 billion in federal funding to the U.N. as part of the Senate's rescission package. Waltz served as U.S. National Security Advisor from January to May before his removal over the Signalgate scandal, in which Waltz added the editor of The Atlantic magazine to a group chat about U.S. war plans against Yemen. He was grilled over the scandal by Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
I mean, this was demonstrably sensitive information. And the question I asked was, were you investigated for this expansion of the Signal Group to include a journalist?
The White House conducted an investigation, and my understanding is the Department of Defense is still conducting an investigation.
Was any disciplinary action taken?
From the White House Investigation Center?
Yes.
No, the use of Signal was not only authorized, it's still authorized and highly recommended.
Republicans on the House Rules Committee have blocked a Democratic-led effort to force the Justice Department to release documents related to its investigation into the dead convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, whom Donald Trump once called a terrific guy. This comes after President Trump published a lengthy diatribe defending his Attorney General Pam Bondi's handling of the Epstein files and calling interest in the Epstein case a waste of time. Trump's post sparked an unprecedented backlash among his MAGA supporters. For the first time ever, Trump was ratioed on his own social media platform, meaning he drew more replies than shares, the vast majority of them negative. On Tuesday, Attorney General Bondi refused to answer reporters' questions about her claim last February, which she has later reversed, that Epstein's client list was sitting on her desk to review.
I appreciate your question, but this today is about fentanyl overdoses throughout our country and people who have lost loved ones to fentanyl. That's the message that we're here to send today. Nothing about Epstein. I'm not going to talk about Epstein. Go ahead.
Meanwhile, a Wired magazine investigation has raised new questions about the Justice Department's handling of prison surveillance video from the New York City federal jail where Jeffrey Epstein died 6 years ago and what later was ruled a suicide. According to Wired, metadata reveals that nearly 3 minutes of footage were cut from what the Trump administration described as full raw video from the only functioning camera near Jeffrey Epstein's prison cell the night before he was found dead. And in Arizona, Adelita Grijalva won the Democratic nomination by a landslide Tuesday in a closely watched special election primary for the congressional seat left vacant when her father, Raul Grijalva, died in March. Four other candidates were vying for the nomination, including 25-year-old activist Deja Fox, who's advocated for generational change in politics and had criticized Grijalva's legacy last name, and Daniel Hernandez, who survived a mass shooting in Tucson in 2011. Where former Congresswoman Gabriel Giffords was shot. He was an intern at Giffords' office at the time. Adelita Grijalva was born in Tucson, has held multiple positions in public office, and garnered a list of heavyweight endorsements, including Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Bernie Sanders. If elected, Grijalva would become the first Latina to represent Arizona in Congress. Grijalva will face Republican nominee Daniel Gutierrez in the general special election in September. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we're going to go back to Chicago later in the broadcast on this day that 80 years ago, the first atomic bomb was detonated in the desert of New Mexico. And there is a historic gathering that's taking place now in Chicago. But first, we go to this New York Times expose. More than 50 million Americans have health insurance coverage under United Health, the largest health insurance company in the United States. On Sunday, the New York Times published a major expose on United Health. The investigation's headline, United Health's Campaign to Quiet Critics, by journalist David Enrich. The article opens with the story of Mary Strauss, a filmmaker, and her father, Dan Strauss, who runs a chain of pharmacies in Wisconsin. Together, they made a docuseries critical of United Health called Modern Medical Mafia that was available on Amazon and Vimeo until it wasn't. This is a clip from the series trailer.
And pharmacists are the most accessible healthcare professionals in America. Last year, 300 independent pharmacies closed. When it comes to healthcare, whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent, we all want the same thing. We want accessible, affordable, quality healthcare.
Although it may not look like a battlefield, it's not guns and knives drawn, the harm is just as great. Killing people, causing people to suffer without any consequence.
We have to stand up. Those that can speak up should speak up.
In his New York Times investigation, journalist David Enrich writes about the Modern Medical Mafia series, quote, Ms. Strauss had no way of knowing it, but the video had been taken down after a law firm working for United Health Group, one of the country's largest healthcare companies, sent a letter warning Amazon and another streaming service, Vimeo, that the video was defamatory, Enrich wrote. He joins us now for more. David Enrich is the deputy investigations editor at the New York Times. Thank you so much for being with us. So your piece is called United Health's Campaign to Quiet Critics. You're also the author of the book Murder the Truth, Fear of the First Amendment, and a Secret Campaign to Protect the Powerful, which certainly ties in. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, David. If you can start off by explaining what happened to Mary and Dan Strauss, also the tip you got, and how this reveals this larger campaign of United Health.
Well, the tip I got about probably a month and a half ago was that Amazon had received a threatening letter from a law firm representing United Health, where they were trying to get negative information about the company taken down from various platforms, whether it was streaming platforms like Prime Video or social media platforms like Instagram and TikTok. And this struck me as a little bit surprising. Companies do this kind of stuff all the time, and powerful people do as well. What surprised me about this was that United Health's lawyers were really going after some fairly obscure stuff. And that suggested to me that this was it was kind of a campaign of desperation that was going on, using really hard-edged, envelope-pushing tactics to intimidate companies, individuals, social media platforms into essentially censoring their users. And when I talked to Mary Strauss and her father, who had both worked on this film, both of them knew the film was gone, but they had not really understood why until I called them and explained to them about this letter that I had seen where UnitedHealth makes some really kind of, I would say, tenuous arguments about why the video violated Amazon's terms of service, including claiming that the documentary had doxed a UnitedHealth subsidiary by simply showing a street sign in their home state of Minnesota that was near where their offices were, which again struck me as a really kind of an act of desperation and something that reflected the increasingly aggressive tactics that a lot of big companies and powerful people are using these days to shut down criticism and even avoid scrutiny at a pretty basic level.
And David, it wasn't just this film. For instance, your piece talks about what happened to an obscure small local paper, the Examiner News, in Mount yeah. Kisco, New York, and its publisher, Adam Stone. Could you talk about what happened there?
Yeah, this was, and this happened even before the murder of UnitedHealthcare's CEO last December. This was back about a year ago now. And Adam Stone is this kind of crusading journalist in the suburbs of New York City who was, I think, very alarmed by the increasing power that UnitedHealth was wielding in the medical community in his area. And so he had written a bunch of investigative pieces looking at the company and its practices and how that was affecting not only patients, but also some of the company's employees. And someone at the company leaked him audio of an internal meeting at this UnitedHealth subsidiary, which he then wrote an article about it and included part of the audio that he had received. That audio he published more than he had initially intended to. It was just like a technical error on his end. And the long portion that he published included some information about patients' medical information. As soon as he realized this, within a couple hours, he took it down and replaced it with a much shorter clip. But UnitedHealth, in the space of just a few hours, had heard the long version. And about a week after he had published this and then removed it, he received a letter from a top executive at UnitedHealth in the area who basically said that you may have just committed a crime. You need to destroy all of the reporting materials you have. And if you don't, and if you continue to publish stuff like this, we might try to go to court and seek an injunction against you continuing to publish this. And Adam Stone, a lot of publishers, especially at small news organizations in that situation, I think probably would have complied with the demand. Adam Stone refused. He then got another letter from the general counsel of this UnitedHealth subsidiary that reiterated those threats. He again refused. And, at that point, UnitedHealth just kind of walked away, and I guess realizing this tactic wouldn't work. But again, it was reflective of a very aggressive campaign to shut down criticism and scrutiny, often targeted at people or institutions that generally do not have the resources or the time to defend themselves.
I want to play a clip from a viral TikTok made by Dr. Elizabeth Potter, a plastic surgeon in Austin, Texas, who received a call from UnitedHealth while in the middle of performing breast surgery on a cancer patient.
It's 2025 and insurance just keeps getting worse. I just did two bilateral deeps and two bilateral tissue expanders for patients. And I've never had this happen before, but during the second deep, I had a phone call into the operating room saying that United Healthcare wanted me to call them about one of the patients who was having surgery today, who was actually asleep having surgery, and said I had to call right now. So I scrubbed out of my case and I called United Healthcare, and the gentleman said he needed some information about her, want to know her diagnosis and whether her inpatient stay should be justified. And I was like, do you understand that she's asleep right now and she has breast cancer? And the gentleman said, actually, I don't. That's a different department that would know that information.
So that's Dr. Elizabeth Potter, who's performing cancer surgery on a woman and is called out of the surgery, scrubs out when she gets a call from UnitedHealth. David, if you can explain what happens, how she falls into the critic category with this TikTok that went viral where she's explaining what happened.
Yeah, well, United, this TikTok video started to get real traction online, And United obviously reflected very badly on United Health. Some of the commenters on the TikTok video expressed pleasure and kind of celebration at the fact that United Healthcare's CEO had been murdered just about a month earlier. And so, I mean, I get why the company was concerned about this and not happy about it. They also disputed some of the kind of facts that were in Potter's video, although I will say that I've reviewed a lot of evidence that substantiates and corroborates what Potter has said. But in any case, they, about a week after the video went viral on TikTok and Instagram, United Health's outside lawyer, this is the law firm Claire Locke, sent a threatening letter to Potter that was basically, first of all, disputing some of the facts in the video, although, again, I don't think they were right about that, but they were disputing some of the facts. But more important, they were making the argument that in an era when there were people who were trying to kill their executives, or at least one of their executives, it was dangerous to have this kind of intense criticism. And in fact, it risked inciting future violence against United Health employees. And that was an argument that I've seen them make in other cases, including with the Modern Medical Mafia video as well. And that I understand why they are very concerned about the safety of their employees. But it's a really pretty aggressive argument to make that saying something online that is criticizing a big, powerful company should be off limits because it risks inciting violence. And anyway, Potter refused to take down the video and apologize for the video, which United Health had demanded she would do. And that seemed for a little bit to be the end of the matter. But as it turned out, Dr. Potter was starting her own surgery center in Austin, Texas, and she needed United Health to sign off on that surgery center being part of the insurer's in-network program so that basically patients could go there without having to pay huge amounts of money for out-of-network coverage. And according to Dr. Potter, right around the time that she aired this video, United Health cut off negotiations with her and refused to classify her surgery center as in-network. And she perceived that as a clear point of retaliation. I will say United Health again disputes that. They say that they had made the decision not to classify her as in-network prior to the publication of her video. But again, from Dr. Potter's point of view, and I've seen evidence to support this, it definitely seemed like the cutoff, the severance of negotiations began happened right around the time of this video. And again, that would, assuming that's true, that would represent a really unusual and highly aggressive act of vengeance that would have real implications for patients, potentially, rather than just the person who was criticizing the company.
And David, to talk about the firm that's doing all this work for United Health, Claire Locke, and some of their principles, what you know about them, and also your own interaction with the law firm at the New York Times.
Yeah. So Claire Locke, it was founded in 2014 by a husband and wife, a pair of lawyers who they specialize in threatening and suing news organizations on behalf of their clients, which overwhelmingly are big companies and powerful people. And they've developed a reputation, which I think they really relish, that they are the most aggressive and have no holds barred law firm in this space in the country. And that certainly has been borne out in my interactions with them over the years. I've been on, my colleagues and I have been on the receiving end of more threatening letters than I can count. Occasionally, they will sue journalists as well. My personal interactions, and I wrote a whole book that centered in large part on Claire Locke and its tactics. And as I was wrapping that up and doing an article about them for the New York Times, they went on a real tirade against me, trying to discredit me with my employer and with my book publisher, making a bunch of ad hominem accusations about me, which were not true, and even going to really great and successful lengths to figure out who some of my sources were, and then threaten them with litigation if they didn't hand over all of their communications with me. And you know, this was a year or so ago that this happened with me, and at which point I had already been spending a lot of time looking into their tactics. And so I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was surprised. But at this point, I'm not surprised to see what they're doing for United Health. I was more surprised that a company like United Health would give a law firm such free rein to and really kind of terrorize people that are speaking out against them, because this country is, you know, founded on the idea of free speech, and that applies to people who are speaking their truth to powerful companies just as much as it applies to just normal political debate.
David Enrich, I want to thank you for being with us, Deputy Investigations Editor at the New York Times. We'll link to your expose, United Health's Campaign to Quiet Critics. He's also author of the book, Murder the Truth, Fear the First Amendment, and a Secret Campaign to Protect the Powerful. When we come back 80 years ago today, the first nuclear bomb in the world was detonated in the desert of New Mexico. Today, the Nobel Laureate Assembly for the Prevention of Nuclear War is gathering in Chicago. It's Nobel Prize-winning scientists, peace activists, and they'll be